We've got coming up here, Bishop James Long. We're going to be talking about exorcisms and demonology. He actually has a class online, so those of you wanting to learn it for real, well, you can take an online course and learn it from the man himself. Wow. That's scary stuff to me. That's just scary stuff to me. When you've been around ghosts along the way, the last thing you want to do is, you know, run into demons and do your best to try to find them. Woo! So we're going to be talking to him. Apparently he had the calling when he was in kindergarten. And I guess he saw a man with, you know, the cloth, the collar around the neck. And he knew as a child that that's what he wanted to be. So we'll ask him about that. We're going to ask him about a book that he wrote, Through the Eyes of an Exorcist. He's been all over. I don't know if you've seen him or not, but you probably have. He's been on the Travel Channel's Ghost Adventures, sci-fi with Spook TV, like documentaries like The Possessed, The Haunted Boy. He and I actually were working on a couple projects as well, which was pretty cool. So that's how I got to know him. He's also from Louisville, Kentucky, where I am. Yay, go Big Blue. Can I say that? Yeah, go Big Blue. American Haunting, he's been on A&E, American Haunting, National Geographic's Paranormal Paparazzi, we've all heard that one. TV Guide, he was actually interviewed by TV Guide. I think that's a pretty big deal there alone. And he was here on Coast to Coast before in 2007. So we're going to be talking about his demonology class. He wants to talk about a book that he thinks he finds interesting as well, that he thinks you will too, because he thinks it is really right on the way it's written. And we're going to learn about possession and what all that means and what true exorcism means and what an exorcist does. So Bishop James Long is coming up. Stick around. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. This is Connie Willis here. We're broadcasting live from the iHeart Media Studios out of Philadelphia. Just a beautiful place. I'm very happy to be here and thank Brian Check for setting me up, and also John and Renard for making sure that everything works here well so that everybody can hear how things are happening. It's a beautiful night in Philadelphia. Hopefully we got some Philly cheesesteaks on the way, because folks, they really are the best here. There's a reason for that. I gained 30 pounds since I didn't gain that much. I try to take it off when that happens. But hey, once you live here too, you'll understand how you, there's one on every corner. So we've got Bishop James Long with us tonight. He's an exorcist. He's actually done 27 to date. He's got a demonology course online that you can take so that you can learn to do, at least be a demonologist. I don't think you can be an exorcist with that. So you know what? We'll just bring him on and we'll ask him about his credentials. And we will also ask how we can be an exorcist or not. So, James, are you there?
I am. Thank you so much for having me on.
I'm excited. I mean, you are right now in my home of Louisville, Kentucky. How's the weather there for us?
It's chilly. Today's gone now. It's like 40 degrees, but pretty chilly tonight.
Yeah, the summer is not very long there, and fall is very short, and then it just gets damp, nasty, and cold, if I remember correctly. But so, James, tell me, can I be an exorcist or can I be a demonologist? Tell me what that is, and what are your credentials? I know at 5 you were ready to take on the calling.
Sure. Well, first of all, in order to be, as far as an exorcist, there are other religions whose clergy are exorcists besides the Catholic Church. So I need to make that very clear. However, it's a validly ordained. One must be validly ordained. And what I mean by that is we have to be careful about the online ordinations, because my dog is ordained through the online service. So we have to be careful about those things.
Well, there's a new show on the air coming up then. There's the hook.
Yeah, it's interesting. So those things are you know, within the theological community, that's, they're legally ordained, absolutely. And some folks do that because they want to marry their loved ones, which I think is beautiful. But we just have to be careful about that. Now, as far as a demonologist, there really is, there's no accrediting body, whether it be a religious accreditation, state accreditation, that bestows the title demonologist on someone. Now, a church can bestow laity demonologist on individuals, but really that's, you got to understand, that has nothing to do with secular, that's not a secular position. That is 100% a ministry position. And so that's a calling. I mean, one has to be called to do this. It's not something that you choose to do, on a Saturday night because you're bored. I mean, this
to be a demonologist or to be an exorcist?
Well, both. I mean, once you get involved in this field, there are serious consequences for it. Make no mistake about it. The consequences can be severe.
Oh, I can imagine.
Well, certainly. And I think when you're dealing with this type, because this is, and I always say this to people, demonology is not paranormal. Demonology is theological. And so there's a real big difference between the paranormal community when we're talking about aliens and Bigfoot and vampires and werewolves versus demonic entities. And we have to be careful not to secularize demonology.
Well, okay, all right. So, okay, first of all, tell me about your credentials,
sure.
Your church, because I know it's different from others. And then let's talk about the demonology.
Okay. I studied for the Roman Catholic Seminary, the priesthood. It was probably the best years of my life. The formation that I received was absolutely phenomenal. So when I say formation, I'm talking about training, both academic and spiritual. And I learned from Benedictines. I learned from Jesuits. I learned from diocesan priests, monks. I mean, just really the education that I received was just, I am eternally blessed for it, really eternally blessed. But I knew that I wanted to help the community at large. And I knew that my calling was to help other people who may not be Roman Catholic and who have some activity going on in their home, and they wouldn't have to go through such red tape. And so there were some other things, too, which, again, I'm not here. I don't want to bash the Roman Church because I love it. It's beautiful. But for me, my calling was for the old Catholic Church. And the old Catholics branched off in 1890 over papal infallibility. So we don't believe the Pope is infallible. We believe that the only person who's infallible who walked on the earth is Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And now keep in mind, old Catholics, we are autonomous. So what that means is we have each independent jurisdictions. So each bishop has their own jurisdiction. So for example, if I say I own oldcatholicchurch.com, well, that doesn't mean that I'm the only old Catholic church. It just means that I own a domain name.
Right,
Or universalcatholic.com or whatever it might be, independentcatholic.com. So understand that each bishop is autonomous. And there's good and there's bad about that. I'm deeply in love with my ministry because I'm able to assist people from all walks of faith. And
your ministry is a little different from the other ones, correct? I mean, you accept homosexuals.
We do. I have absolutely no problem saying that we proudly ordain gay and lesbian women because we do not feel that God, when we start restricting God and who God calls to ministry, that makes me very nervous. Now, keep in mind, there are some old Catholic jurisdictions that they will not ordain gay and lesbians. They will not ordain women. So you got to understand, there are some that are extreme conservative. There are some that are extreme liberal. And quite honestly, I think both are unhealthy. So we have a belief system and canons that we do ordain gay and lesbians. However, if you are single, you're celibate. I don't care if you're gay or straight. That to me is irrelevant. If you're single, you are celibate. If you are in a relationship, then it must be monogamous. And so those are our canons, and we're very strict about that. I'm celibate, and I'm because I'm called to the celibate life. I love celibacy. To me, it's as natural as breathing. And so not everyone is called to celibacy, and we understand that.
Well, you were called to be an exorcist. Is that right?
Yeah, well, at 5 years old, without question, I knew I wanted to be a priest. There was no doubt about it. I mean, I grew up Catholic, Roman Catholic, and I remember, we were at a church, our church that we go every Sunday, and Friday the teacher asked us what we wanted to be and draw a picture, and I drew a picture, and while we were going in, I was telling my mom what we did for on Friday, and she said, well, what did you tell her you wanted to do? And I pointed at the priest who was on the altar and said, I want to do what he does, and there was no question. There was never, ever a doubt. And as the years progressed, it just that deep love for ministry and a deep love for my calling grew. I mean, just it was just the calling was so enormous. I just couldn't ignore it. There's no way. But also at 9 years old, I really knew that I wanted to learn something. I knew that I had a deep calling for the priesthood. That was no question. But I also wanted to learn the opposite of what God was. And I didn't know why.
Sorry? No, that's interesting. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I didn't know why. I didn't know where it came from. I didn't know what the attraction was because my mother and my dad, you know, we were a pretty strict household. We didn't do all the scary movies, all this stuff. But I knew that while my other friends were playing with their G.I. Joes, I was just so drawn to learning about angelology and demonology. And I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what the terms meant, but I knew that I had to learn what was the opposite of God.
You had something wired in you, it sounds like.
No question, because it's a calling. Mm-hmm. And that's why I stress that to people over and over and over, that this truly is a calling.
So what is a demonologist?
Oh, you know, that's a great question. And one of the things that I don't like is I'm not a big fan of the loose definition of the terminology.
Well, every TV show has a demonologist on it now, by the way.
Yes.
So that's why I'm like, what is a demonologist? Yeah, right?
And that is a problem. So the paranormal clergy, I started that 14 years ago. And now great friends, Rich Valdez and Kat Lang, are the administrators now of the paranormal clergy. We have teams all across the United States. It's phenomenal. And we came up with a definition that a demonologist is one who has primary research in the field of demonology and may be appointed by church leadership to investigate demonic cases. Now, that's real important to understand the first part, primary research. There are a lot of people out there who read books on demonology, and then they tell everyone they're demonologists.
Mm-hmm,
that's not primary, that's secondary research. So the primary research is people who actually are boots on the ground, who had really true, valid cases of demonic infestation. And those, I believe, are the true demonologists, not people who can regurgitate information that they read in a book.
Well, you have a class, and it's online. So if they take that class, and I guess there's a certificate at the end, and that then that means, hey, you are a demonologist at that point?
No. Because that is a religious title that we do not bestow on anyone simply because they take a class. That, when you're talking about a laity demonologist, that is something that is very, very specific. And we have to really vet that person before we're willing to say, okay, the church, the United States Catholic Church, stands behind you and your ministry as a laity demonologist. What this class does, demonologyclass.com, is if people want to learn more in depth about demonology and start the process of learning, then it gives a very, very, very good insight. I mean, it's not easy. It's hard work.
I can imagine. I know you. You're a perfectionist, and I know you are making people like, you know, they got to know everything, I'm sure. I know how you are, so I could imagine. I think, what did you say, it takes anywhere from a month and a half to 4 months to complete?
At least, and that's for a student who's right on top of it. I mean, but it's a good class. I mean, and again, the reason is we don't bestow a title of demonologist, certainly not exorcist, that would never happen, is because, quite honestly, there are now so many classes online, and people are bestowing the title of demonologist on people, and that really is a diploma mill. And I used to serve as a dean of a college, and I used to sit on a board from an accrediting body, and we would go to colleges to make sure that they are in standards with accreditation. So I'm very familiar with accreditation, especially from the academic perspective. I don't support organizations that bestow titles upon people in which they haven't worked for it, or mm-hmm. titles that really should not be bestowed on anyone without church affiliation, because it is a ministry.
Hey, I got to tell you, you know what? I actually went to the Culinary Institute of America, Greystone, the one in Napa. And so I am a graduate of the CIA. I've done cooking on television for money. So I am a chef. And when I hear somebody else being called a chef and they've done nothing like that, I go crazy. So I can understand how you do just in what you're talking about, because your world is very dangerous.
Sure it is. And I think that's That's what bothers me the most, is the fact that people are going into people's homes who are legitimately frightened, and they're saying, well, I'm a demonologist, and I just read a book. I've never had a – they sit and tell everybody, oh, I've had all these cases. And really, that makes me very, very nervous.
Well, James, they can make it worse. They can make it worse.
No question. Absolutely.
And then they have to find you.
Yeah, and they do. Connie, they really do.
I believe that. Now, just to say, the demonologyclass.com, it is online. It's only $99, which, by the way, that's unbelievable, because I know I've taken classes myself on in other areas that are way, way more than that. I know you don't take the money. You give those funds to the homeless. Is that correct?
We have a homeless ministry here in Louisville, and it's just phenomenal. I mean, the need is just, it breaks your heart. It will break your heart, because the last thing that I want to say to anybody is we can't help you, especially if they're legitimate and they really truly need assistance. It just really bothers me to say no. So, you know, we try to use those funds for all of our ministry, whether it be traveling to cases, because there's a lot of expenses. We don't charge for this ministry. We never have. We've never received one penny. And we never will, never, under any circumstance. If any team member, if any affiliate of the paranormal clergy charges, when we find out, they are immediately removed from the paranormal clergy, and we have nothing to do with them. That's never happened, because they know that I have a zero tolerance for that.
Yeah, anybody that's ever worked next to you or just been around you, they know it's perfection, and it's this way or not. I mean, there's no question about it, and you don't hold anything back. In any way when it comes to anything like that. We'll definitely talk about that a little later on. But so let's say, what would a demonologist do? What are they called upon? Because I know there's a difference between that and an exorcist. So tell me about what a demonologist is called to do.
Well, one thing that they do is they have that primary research, so they know what to look for when they go to someone's home. So we get so many cases. Gosh, we get so many cases. And a demonologist, a trained demonologist, will be able to go into the home, recognize actual activity that is clearly spiritual in nature versus something that can be explained logically. Like Rich is one of those analytical person. Rich Valdez, who's one of the administrators, he's very analytical, and he analyzes everything to a talking about. He's very structured, but that's good, because that's what you need.
Absolutely. So what are they looking for?
Well, they're looking for activity that's clearly displays that there is actually demonic infestation. And then they report that information to clergy. So if they say, listen, we have a case, and this is what's going on, we believe there is something happening here, and we need clergy's attention.
Okay.
So they're really our foot soldiers. They're the first ones. They're the first
ones. Oh, I got you.
They're the first ones to give that pastoral counseling to family, and that's important.
I understand. Okay. So what is it that they look for? What is it that they find that, I know there's a ton of paranormal teams out there. There's a bazillion of them, and I'm happy about that, because it seems like they're actually the first on the ground. They're almost like the Marines. They go in, and then they can call a demonologist, I would think, from there, and then to go even further. So what is it that the demonologist would find and say, hey, this is demonic? I'm going to find out from you in a few minutes, okay? Because we gotta go do a little bit of commercial stuff here. So hang on with that answer. This is Bishop James Long talking about exorcisms. We're going to find out what a demonologist actually finds to say that there's demonic activity going on there. So this is Connie Willis. You're listening to Coast AM. We've got some interesting conversation going on with Bishop James Long, talking about demonology right now, then going to get into exorcists and exorcisms. We're going to see if you're able to do those, or only he or people trained like him can do those. So we're going to be talking about that here in just a few minutes. Also, in the next hour, I'm going to get a little deeper with him. I'm going to ask him some trick questions, possibly, about E.T. and hybrids and things we talked about with Dr. David Jacobs earlier, to see where God fits in to all of that, with them coming down to earth and living amongst us. I think that'll be definitely interesting. And then after that, we're going to be taking phone calls. So if you've got some questions, hang out for us, because that's what tonight's all about: exorcisms, demons, and we're going to see where God fits into all of the ET stuff too. Connie Willis here, live with Coast to Coast AM. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis with Bishop James Long. We had just left him, and we were talking about demonology. And I guess what we really want to know, or what I really want to know right now, is what is it, James, that means it's demonic? What is the difference between, you know, maybe poltergeist activity or just some little Casper the Friendly Ghost in your home? Which, by the way, Dr. David Jacobs would say, and he didn't get to it, Dr. David Jacobs would tell you there are no ghosts. They're actually ET. And if you will believe more that it's a ghost instead of them, they're fine with that. And if you are into clowns and they freak you out, well, that's what they'll do. So that's kind of interesting. But anyway, we'll get back to you with demonic activity. What is that?
Well, first of all, you know, when families call us, they're legitimately terrified. I mean, they really are terrified. So this is not just a matter of things moving. Human spirits have the ability to move objects, but the intent is to say, hey, look, I'm here. So, or you smell their scent. They're just letting you know that they're here, they're with you, it's okay. So you got to look at the intent of the what's behind the activity. For example, a demonic entity is not interested in being polite. A demonic entity does not move things to say, look, I'm just letting you know I'm here. A demonic entity moves things and you're the target.
And I'm also thinking that when you talk about they let their smell out too, that they're the demonic ones are not, they're not sporting Old Spice or anything like that, right?
It's rather putrid. I can't describe the smell. It's overwhelming to the point where it will make you ill.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really powerful. It just you know, when I was a chaplain for the police department, you know, we would unfortunately go and be called out if someone had, committed suicide and maybe their body had been decomposing for a while. The smell is worse than that.
Ooh.
I mean, it's truly overwhelming. But what will happen often is when you have a demonic infestation is there'll be bangings and threes. It's a mocking of the Trinity. Religious objects are desecrated. Animals are terribly frightened. I mean, when an animal notices or is aware that there's a human spirit, it's more inquisitive, goes towards it. Whereas a demonic, it hides, and animals can get very sick. It becomes very violent. And so when you're doing, of course, and if you start doing prayers, then the activity becomes even worse.
Why is that? Why are demons, if they're so powerful and so mean and vicious, why is it that they're afraid of the crucifix? They're afraid of hearing the word God. They're afraid of even their names being said, correct?
Well, sure. Well, the reason is they're afraid of this is because that, and it, God, the crucifix with the corpus, is what suppresses them. That is ultimately their Achilles heel. And so it is a complete repulsion against God, a total repulsion against God. And so therefore, when you use religious objects, one of the things that, and those are called sacramentals of the church, like, for example, holy water, that's called a sacramental, incense, those are sacramentals. But people got to be very careful about throwing holy water around like it's tap water, because if you have a true demonic infestation and you're throwing holy water around, you're going to have a response. You have a blessed object, obviously intermingling with something that's truly evil, and there's going to be a response. And if the family's not prepared for that response, it can get really, really violent. And a lot of people are doing that. A lot of demonologists, or people who claim to be demonologists, are running around throwing holy water all around the house. And then what happens is the family then comes back into the home, and all hell breaks loose.
I'm not being smart by asking this question. I just got to ask this question. Again, I'm not being smart to you, but if there's a demonic there, and if I throw holy water on it, and you know there's problems with it, what if I just throw regular water, and will it know the difference? Will it laugh at me? What happens then?
Well, certainly, and the thing is with regular tap water, it's not blessed. It's not a blessed object. And so when a blessed object comes in contact with an unholy object, there's going to be a response. And you also have to keep in mind that one of the things that I always tell people all the time, especially paranormal investigators, they go into these places that allegedly have demonic infestation, and they say, come on, I dare you, do something, push me. If you're so tough, push me.
Oh, they're asking for trouble.
Well, here's what a demonic entity
in my
does.
Book.
Well, sure, because a demonic entity is looking right at them and saying, oh, I will. I'll push back when you're sick, when you lose your job, when your husband leaves you or your wife leaves you, when you're sick, when you're in the hospital, when your children are sick. That's when I provoke back.
James, you actually said that in an extremely scary way, by the way.
But it's true.
Wow.
And they do. And they do. Demonic entities provoke back.
Mm-mm-mm. So the demon, okay, you have a Casper the Friendly Ghost in your home. Maybe they passed away at one point and they're just hanging out. But if you have a demonic, they're in there. They're pushing at you. They're mean. They're upset at you. What is their plan? They want you out of the house so they can hang out there for eternity and crack a beer? I mean, what is that about?
Yeah, a malevolent human spirit. Again, it goes with the intent. When you're dealing with a malevolent human spirit that does not want you in the dwelling, that's one thing. A demonic infestation is not there to say, leave this house right now so I can stay in here and dwell it. A demonic, the intent, everyone says, well, why does possession occur? Well, why do they possess people? What's the whole point of that? And it's rather simple. The whole point of possession is not the person. To hurt the person, the person is a pawn in the game. The whole purpose of possession is to hurt God, because how you hurt God is to hurt the very ones he loves unconditionally, which is us.
Ah, so they desecrate the temple.
And most certainly. There you go.
Interesting. So we go from demonic activity to possession, because the demonic jumps into the person, and then that's a whole new ball game.
Well, when you're first of all, to classify demonic activity, we really have to classify them into two categories. You have the ordinary demonic activity, which is temptation pulling you into sin. All right, that's ordinary.
Like an example.
Well, lust, greed, seven deadly sins.
So you got a family, and maybe there's a husband, wife, and two kids, and now you're breaking up the family in some way with temptation and sin, where the couple that's been happily married, all of a sudden there's some problems going on.
That is correct. That's ordinary. That's ordinary demonic activity as far as the ordinary category. And then you have the extraordinary. And the extraordinary demonic activity is really classified into four categories. It's demonic infestation, which we talked about. Demonic oppression, which means it's more of the physical attacks, where it begins to physically attack the individual.
They're in their bed. They feel something on them. They feel something grab their ankle, things like that.
Scratches, punches. And you're also talking about, when you're talking about demonic oppression, now you're getting to the incubus and succubus cases as well. Mm-hmm. And that, I have had several incubus and succubus cases, and we can talk about that. Now, that is bone-chilling.
Okay, we'll save that one. I'm writing it down. Okay, so infestation, oppression.
And then you have obsession, demonic obsession. And what that is there's mental attacks against the mind of the person. So they begin to believe that they are crazy. Now, this is important to note, because in that stage, the demonic entity is eradicating the intellect and the will. So in other words, the intellect is obsession. The person truly believes they're going crazy. They're seeing things. They're hearing things. They know they're seeing them. It isolates them completely from their family. So it attacks the mental capacity of the individual. That's demonic obsession. Demonic oppression is when it begins to physically attack, and that's breaking down the will. So in other words, if you got to think about that, you're under constant physical attack. Your sleeping habits are zero now. To zero.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's constantly waking you up. It's constantly punching you and biting you and scratching you. So whereas normally people get 8 hours of sleep, if you're lucky, you might get an hour, maybe. But that's every day. Now, just imagine that.
Mm-mm.
Constant. Connie, we're talking constant, over and over and over. And when the intellect and will are eradicated, in other words, the person has completely isolated from their family, they will begin to hear the demon interact with them, saying, no one's going to believe you. Everyone thinks you're crazy. And then the will, they can't fight anymore. They've just exhausted. They give up. Then you have possession. And that's the fourth stage of the extraordinary form.
And then what happens in possession?
Well, with possession, you have, of course, full possession, which is very rare, and then you have transient possession. And transient possession is more, we see more cases of transient possession. That's when the demonic entity enters the body and leaves at will. Whereas full possession, that's very dangerous. Well, they're both very dangerous, but when you're talking about full, perfect possession, you're talking about the person has absolute, there's no relief at all, none. And so the probability of this person expiring is very high because the demonic entity will not allow substance of life to enter the body, like food or water, because they become violently ill and they regurgitate. So the demonic entity has complete control over the body, which some terrible things have happened. I mean, I've seen cases where people have ripped their fingernails completely off of their fingers.
Right in front of you.
Yes. No question. That's minor.
I was going to say that's probably minor. Can you tell me more of those things? I know that you don't like to tell a lot of the things that happen, and I know you do not ever, 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 ever have video or pictures taken when you do any exorcism type things. But what can you tell me? You know, if that's a simple thing where somebody pulls their fingernails off of themselves right in front of you, holy cow!
Well, you know, I've never seen levitation. I've seen what appeared to be a contortion of the body, where it appeared that the person was somewhat of a levitating state, but it was more of a contortion of the body of a snake-like contortion. It was very, you know, the face was contorted. But the multiple pitches, the screams, the mimicking the voice of deceased loved ones, which has happened to me. The pulling the hair, I mean, just yanking gobs of hair out at a time, and just the voice that you'll never. The voice is what. The only way that I can describe it is if you were to talk normally and then put the same sentence in multiple layer of pitches, and it's almost like a screeching, multiple layers. I can't.
They have this power to be able to go, like, in your mind and pull out from your memory what some deceased person sounded like and shoot it back at you because they know it's going to affect you.
Sure.
That's quite an ability there.
It is. And the purpose is to distract you so that, you know, the right will stop. And, yeah. and you know, you can't, or even your sins. That's why it's very important that the priest and exorcist will... you know, there's fasting that has to be done, and there's, of course, the sacrament of reconciliation, which is confession that has to be done. I mean, it's intense, the preparation. So when someone says, you know, I want an exorcism, well, you know, Father Gary Thomas, who the movie The Rite was made after, was a brilliant, brilliant scholar in this field. He always tells people, I don't perform exorcism on command, and because you can't. I mean, there's so much that has to go in to the preparation of even considering an exorcism. I mean, before you even consider it, there's so much to prepare for.
Well, what are the stages of exorcism?
Well, you know, so when a person is actually physically possessed, there are several stages. And there's one, the presence. And that's the feeling in the room where the ritual takes place. It really is a feeling of evil. You can feel it's overwhelming sometimes.
You've prepared, you know without a doubt this is what's going on, you've prepared, and now you're going into the room, you're ready to do this, and now you start feeling what you're describing, I remember, with Linda Blair.
Sure, absolutely. And there are some things that, you know, the movie The Exorcist was based on a true story, as most of us know. However, you know, the pea soup and that kind of thing, there is some legitimacy with that, in that the demonic entity will not allow substance of life to enter the body. So if you're trying to give them water or Gatorade or whatever it might to combat, you know, dehydration, the person will become very violently ill, and they will regurgitate. And so you have, that's why it's really, really important that you have someone who's trained medically with you, because they have to make sure that they're monitoring the vitals.
So but who all's in the room with you?
Well, it's me. It's another clergy member who's trained primarily, because if something were to happen to the primary exorcist, then he would have to take over. I'd have to be removed from the room. And so when you're dealing with in these stages, so you got the presence, the pretense, the demon then hides behind the possessed. Acting is, you know, if the body and the demon are one and the same person, this, you know, spirit will, it'll sometimes try to convey the exorcist is the villain. It's going to do anything in the world at this time to throw off the ritual. Then there's a breakthrough, and the exorcist at this time has gotten the demon to break the pretense, and the demon will start to use the words I and we interchangeably. Oh. That's really important. And then, of course, the voice.
And when he's doing that, the voice is coming out of that person, but you know it's not that person because it's so different sounding?
Absolutely. Okay. And then you have that voice where now the demon knows it's been exposed, and it's going to try to confuse the priest, and it'll display, you know, the power by, the voice then becomes, at this point, it becomes very distorted and quite terrible. And then you have the clash. And
wait a minute, hold up. Let's go. Before the clash, the voice distorted. Can you, just as an example, can you kind of have let us know what that sound would sound like?
Oh, imagine a scream, and the screaming is the multiple pitches, multiple tones that is so ear-piercing, it'll make you sick to your stomach. It's almost like the vocal cords are being so strained, you're afraid that the vocal cords are going to be ripped.
Oh.
That's the best way to describe it.
So that's the sound, but you actually can determine what words they're saying as well with that sound.
With the screaming, because at this time you're using sacramentals of the church. You're using the holy water. You're using the crucifix with the corpus. You know, there's several things that you're using at this time and continuing the prayer. And at this, again, this, when you're dealing with an exorcism, the intellect and will of the demonic is being eradicated, and the intellect of the will of the exorcist is being challenged.
I got you.
So
I got you.
One is going to win, and one is going to lose.
Mm-hmm. And how many, we're at the voice right now, right before the clash that you're saying, I think that's number five. How many hours are you into this possibly at this point?
It varies. I mean, it could be up to an hour. It could be 10 hours, 15 hours, 20 hours.
Okay.
So, I mean, you have to take a break The exorcist obviously has to have a break, but you're also very, very concerned about the person possessed, because at this time, the demonic is doing things to the body that you have to be careful that it's not hurting or harming the body, because it certainly will. Now, people will restrain a person. You got to be very careful with that, because it's against the law. It's illegal unless you have legal permission to do so by the person who is possessed, or by the person who is the primary caregiver.
Yikes! Well, hang in there, James, with me for a minute. We gotta take a break here. We're gonna be coming back with I think three more stages of exorcism. Wow, Bishop James Long giving us some great education here on being an exorcist. That's coming up here. Connie Willis with Coast to Coast. Stick around.